This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. You're listening to Baseball Outside the Box, and I'm your host. I'm still here, Pete Caliendo. This is the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo, and we got a coach for you tonight that fits that mold perfectly. Welcome to all our new listeners. Thank you for joining us. We hope you stay with us. You like the show, continue to listen every week. And of course, our loyal listeners, if it wasn't for you, this show would not be going on at all. We want to thank you. It just, you know, do us a favor, just share the show. The more you share it everywhere on social media, you know, the more people listen to it, it just gets the show out there and just helps us continue. So thank you. And don't forget, just a quick announcement, Caliendo Sports International is heading to Japan this summer with a 15, 14-year-old team. We are down to looking for one more quality player. If you're interested, if you've never done anything international baseball is an unbelievable experience. I've been fortunate enough to be in it for over 30 years. It's hard to articulate real quick, but basically, you know, you're going to train with the Japanese, play against them. You're going to see the culture. You're going to can't believe, and we're going to talk about it on the actual podcast too, about Japanese baseball a little bit. You can't believe what an experience it will be for coaches, players, and parents. So if you're interested, just email me at petercaliendo@att.net. Love getting your emails. So don't forget, email me anytime. Doesn't have to be just about the trip. Could be about anything else. Hey, we've got a great show for you. We always say we got a great show for you because we think we've got one of the best podcasts around. So we're excited about today's show. We're going to call it a strategic, developmentally appropriate approach to building skill and confidence. Basically, we're going to talk about several aspects of the game, how to develop players. And our guest, Trent Mongero. Yes, I know you're all going to email me and say, Pete, another Italian. How many Italians are you going to put on this show? Well, I can't help it that Italians are just great coaches, educators, and teachers. Now, I know there's other people out there just as good, but the Italian community has a great amount of coaches, and we're proud of them. So let me tell you real quickly about Trent, and then I'll give you all his social media because he's on there. He's one of the most followed social media people out there. I've seen a lot of followers on his social media account. He is at Coach Mongero, M-O-N-G-E-R-O. We'll have it all in our show notes. He's also his website, playwinningbaseball.com and Dirt Bros. That's D-I-R-T-B-R-O-S.com. We'll talk about those. Hey, he's the head coach for over 25 years. He's been in baseball. He's the head coach at North Hall High School in Gainesville, Georgia. So we are going to the beautiful state of Georgia. He played in the Braves farm system, is an associate scout for the Boston Red Sox. I hope he got a ring. He specializes in baseball instruction and coaches. He's an author. He's got 3 books, individual DVDs. He's on YouTube, and you got to go to his YouTube. I go there all the time. He's got great stuff, so check it out. He's the president of Winning Baseball. He's the author of Winning Baseball books, and the books and DVDs that he has in the actual book, it took him 7 years of writing, rewriting, filming, editing for the Sterling Publishing Company. Great resource. So that's just a real quick synopsis of his bio, but great guy. Again, can't wait to get started. So let's not even waste any time. Trent, how you doing, buddy? Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box.
Doing great, Peter. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. I had my espresso just about 10 minutes ago, so that gets me going. And you know, I got you on the line. Can't get any better than this, talking baseball with somebody who, by the way, I forgot to mention, an ABCA speaker, a member, obviously, also a speaker, well-followed speaker with the ABCA. Again, we really appreciate it because if people don't know, you know, Trent's got school tomorrow morning too, and it's already 10:09 in Georgia. It's 9 o'clock in Chicago. So thanks for being on, buddy.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
All right. Let's give our audience, let's start it off with, well, I'll tell you what, tell them about your website and also a little bit about some of the books. That you'll do a much better job than I did.
Yeah, that's great. I don't want to wear them out with this stuff, but my books, you know, are Winning Baseball. The main websites are playwinningbaseball.com. That's really where you can find all the resources. And then we have Dirt Bros, B-R-O-S, baseball.com. You know, that's all infield play specific is the Dirt Bros. That's the new site that we just started over Christmas, and it's taken off because there's a lot of need for specific infield instruction. You know as well as I do, Peter, that hitting and pitching are flooded markets, but infield play is one that's, you know, needs more instruction, needs more people. We need more people giving information to the to coaches of all levels to try to help improve our defense. So those are the main resources I have, of course, besides YouTube, which, you know, we have quite a bit of teasers out there on YouTube, over 100 clips.
Absolutely. And I love them. And listen, audience, I've got Trent's books, and let me tell you, it reaches every level because it starts with beginners, intermediates, advanced. It comes with DVDs. It's outside. You know, I'm not sure how you do it, man. 25 years of, you know, teaching high school, coaching, and doing all this stuff. You know, I'm not sure. You must not get much sleep.
Well, I'm not sure why, you know, I was chosen to be the one to do all that, but it was an honor to put it all together. Sterling asked me to do it, Sterling Publishing, and, you know, I had some tremendous help. Tim Hyers, who is the big league hitting coach for the Boston Red Sox, did all the hitting with me in the books. And, of course, everything now is downloads. There's no actual DVDs that come with the books anymore. Everything is digital download. The guy that helped me with the pitching is the big league pitching coach for the Oakland A's, Scott Emerson. So I had some tremendous guys working with me to put the resources together. But, you know, it was a grind when it was going on, for sure, trying to teach, coach, and write and edit. And we filmed over 100 hours of instruction all at one time. It took us 6 or 7 days from sunup to sundown because we had to do everything at every level, as you mentioned, starting with T-ball all the way through to college. And we covered every position, including defensive play. So it was a massive undertaking, but, you know, like I say, it was an honor to do it. And I hope tonight I can shed some insight that can help some coaches and parents and players on their journey.
Absolutely. And folks, just so you know, Trent also has traveled to the Czech Republic, Hungary, Slovakia, with you know, internationally with purpose-driven baseball and worked with coaches and players out there. So he's got international experience on top of it. And, you know, by the way, just want to mention, I guess I showed my age, you know, when I'm still on DVDs. So I'm holy Moses.
But yeah, listen, I say the same thing.
Let's get rolling, Trent. You know, I want to start with this. You know, I was in an independent ball for about 10 years, and my job, one of my jobs was to put the teams together, sign contracts, find players and all that. You know, obviously when you're structuring a team and you can actually pick players, you know, you're pretty fortunate, but you still got competition because everybody other independent teams after those players. What two things everybody knows, pitching and defense, you hear it all the time, you know, and so I want to start with the defensive part. And when it comes to defense, I want you to, you know, you do a lot on the throwing aspect. You got some great stuff. I want you to talk to our audience about catch play, why it's so important. And I'll tell you what, you know, I travel the U.S. too, and, you know, nothing against the U.S. We got great coaches, great players, no doubt about it. But a lot of times at the younger levels, man, they just have – they cannot play catch that well. And I've been fortunate. I've been to Japan 20, 30 times working with Japanese players. These kids can play catch, you know, every day at 10 years old, 9 years old. They can do it all. It's amazing. Where are we at, and why? What do we need to do to train our coaches to work with young kids when it comes to catch play?
Well, you know, there's no reason why the kids in America or any kid anywhere in the world shouldn't be able to do what the Japanese kids are doing. So apparently they're putting, you know, a precedence on the importance of catch play, and they're working on it because really that's all that it takes. You know, you have to teach people the fundamental skills of throwing, and then you have to implement a program, which we call catch play, that fits into your practice schedule. That's, you know, going to develop the fundamental skills of throwing and catching. And you can't play the game without it. And I think it's overlooked a lot, Peter, because at the younger levels, they're playing on smaller fields. And, you know, the margin for error is not as big, meaning that, you know, you don't have to make throws as far, so you're not going to pull people off bags and that kind of thing. But when it really starts to become noticeable in America is when we start pitching. You know, the player pitch age group, you know, what do we know that for? Walks, right? Walks, walk, walk, walk. You know, they can't throw a strike. Well, pitching is throwing. And when you learn to throw fundamentally, you can repeat and you can throw with accuracy. So throwing a strike is not a big deal. Throwing the ball across the infield is not a big deal. Receiving the baseball, which is catching the baseball, you know, you're comfortable to your right, to your left, up, down, on the move, you know. So there's a systematic approach to implementing it. And that's the biggest challenge is young coaches have to familiarize themselves with the skills of throwing. And I cover that stuff in the books in depth and a little bit on my YouTube channel. And, you know, it's not that difficult. It's not rocket science. So once they learn that, then you got to implement the fundamental drills. So now you're talking about a practice. So it really becomes where you have to emphasize in your practice, you have to implement this program. And I always tell people, don't try to put the whole program in at one time. It's way too much, especially for the younger age groups. So put it in little chunks, you know, let them get comfortable with the different drills, but have a routine that is the same every time they start practice so that they can learn and develop the throwing and catching skills. You'd be surprised how quickly they improve once they implement these routines. I've had coaches across the country, like literally hundreds and hundreds, tell me that have implemented these programs that how much better they become. And literally it translates into good baseball because you can't play the game itself on the defensive side without throwing and catching. We always tell people, Peter, you know, if you can't throw and catch, you can't play. You're going to eliminate yourself right out of the game. So, yes, it's extremely important, and it's just a matter of implementing, you know, the proper catch play routine.
Well, you know what? That's what I love about you. Looking at your stuff and reading it all, you know, I feel like we've got similar philosophies. And what I love about it is, you know, once you establish, and I notice once you establish your kids that are throwing pretty decent and playing catch pretty decent, and I think sometimes we underestimate the young ages because I think they can do more than what people think they can do as long as you let them free a little bit. What I noticed in your catch play, and I may be jumping a little ahead because, you know, they might need to make sure that the fundamentals are pretty good before they start doing things, but right, just like I do, but I've learned a lot of your stuff. You know, you catch play, but you do it to game situations.
Right, right. Well, we have certain elements. The first part of catch play is really dedicated to specific drills that each have a purpose. But then we get into trying to create game-like throws. We call it specialty throwing by position, where basically you're going to implement, you know, whatever position you play or positions, you're going to try to replicate some of those throws. And then we try to create some athleticism by doing things like 180s and reverse 180s, 360s, one-legged throws, just trying to get people to, you know, these young players or older players for that matter, to be athletic and to trust their ability to use their body and to throw from different angles. Because the higher level you get, you know, the more you have to be able to be athletic, and the game requires different types of throws. You don't always get to set up and create perfect alignment and make this, you know, fundamental throw. Sometimes you get put in awkward positions and you still have to be able to execute. So the routine allows itself to all of that, to the fundamental drills and yes, athleticism, game-like throws.
You know, Trent, here's the thing I wanted to ask you specifically. Let's take the routine that you're talking about. Yeah. You know, okay, I get it that you got to play a little catch to warm up, but do you really have to play a lot of catch? Can't you use your catch routine as a warm up?
Without a doubt. I mean, I call it the most important 20 minutes of practice. We do it every day, you know, at the school that I coach at right now, which, by the way, I'm at Glenn Academy. I left North Hall a couple of years ago, but you wouldn't have known that. But at Glenn Academy in Brunswick, Georgia, we do the throwing this most important 20 minutes of practice every single day. And we don't do any throwing to warm up. The routine itself allows for natural warm-up to take place. So we're actually working on becoming better throwers and receivers of the baseball. And just as an extra bonus, doing that routine, you're going to naturally warm up. So when we're done with our most important 20 minutes of practice catch play routine, our guys are 100% ready to do whatever we have to do from a defensive standpoint in practice.
Trent, let me back up a second because I should have asked this first. You know, when you talk about prior to that, prior to your game-like warm-up, what should young coaches be doing with the kids before they get to this part?
Well, they should, you know, really get their body prepared to throw. We want to get the body temperature increased, work a little sweat up through a dynamic, you know, stretching routine is what we do. It's a stretching through movement as opposed to static, which is standing still, you know, the old school, you know, touch your toes kind of stuff. We don't do that. Everything is done through movement. So we do a dynamic flex routine, and then we actually implement the Jaeger tubing routine prior to actually going into our catch play routine. So there's two elements of practice. Now, at the youth level, you know, you don't have to do a complex dynamic flex routine. You know, you might could do something like have them run a lap or two just to get their body temperature up, what have you. But you got to prepare the body for work. And so those are the two things that we do prior to our catch play routine.
How about things you might be stressing when they're playing catch? Anything specific as far as, you know, their hands, anything with positioning, when they go to throw? Just a few little tips for our coaches to understand what positions they should be getting into.
Yeah, well, I always talk about the guys being athletic and not being robotic. You know, we are athletes and we don't want to coach that out of our young players or older players for that matter. You know, anybody that pitches, we have them alternate grips through their throwing drills. So they're going to go from a four seam to a two seam to a changeup. We want them becoming extremely comfortable with the different grips and maintaining their arm speed through the different grips, especially the changeup, and then developing accuracy. So, you know, we definitely do that. We talk to them about, you know, catching the ball cleanly. Some terminology that I use there is dominate the ball, basically meaning beat the ball to the spot, catch it cleanly. Don't let the ball, you know, control you. Don't let the ball take the glove and, you know, move it in the direction that the ball was going before you catch it. You want to catch the ball under control. I'm not talking about stabbing at the ball or, you know, reaching out of control. Just basically beat the ball to the spot out front, have flexion in your elbow and wrist, and catch it clean. You should hear a nice clean pop when you make a clean catch. So I even, when I'm teaching throwing and catching, we even show them wearing the glove, you know, how to wear the glove, different options to wear the glove, where to catch the ball in the glove, you know, how to pinch the glove. There's different ways to close the glove based on what you're trying to do. Are you trying to deflect? Are you trying to catch and take the ball out and throw? So just depending on the age group, Peter, we, you know, I'm constantly giving cues. You know, I want them to move their feet. Defense is all about feet. Catching the ball is all about feet. Ideally, we want to catch the ball inside our shoulders. And when we do catch the ball inside our shoulders, we typically want to use two hands, meaning our thumbs are going to be somewhat tied together. They're going to work together in tandem to catch the ball. When the ball's outside our shoulders, or it's not realistic, we can't get our feet moved to catch inside the shoulders. Now we got to reach outside. That's going to be a one-handed catch to our glove side or across our body to our backhand. And the main reason why we do that one-handed is because we have more reach and athleticism when we go with one hand outside of our shoulders as opposed to trying to reach with both. So I talked to them about those, you know, those main things, being free and easy. I talk about aiming small, miss small, you know, like throw to a target, not just the person. You're not just throwing to your throwing partner. You're throwing to the emblem on his cap, his chin, his ear, his right ear, his left ear, the center of his chest, left shoulder, right shoulder. You know, you're aiming small and you miss small. Most people don't know, especially young players, that they're supposed to be that precise. They generally just pick up the overall person and throw to the person. So these are little cues that we give them among many more, you know, during this catch play routine. And anybody that's listening should be saying, you know, wow, you know, it really is unbelievably important. Look at all the attention to detail that's going into this element of practice, you know, this 20 minutes. So instead of going, hey, guys, go down the line and throw a little bit and get ready for practice, we're using that same time to actually get better. And it pays huge dividends.
Outstanding. And how about when you get a, you know, some players where they, you know, you want them and you might talk to them about moving their feet and you're talking about the technique, but all of a sudden they're still struggling moving their feet. Is there a drill or two that you guys do that kind of forces them to move their feet and starts teaching that?
It depends on, you know, the age group that you're talking about. If you're talking about youth players, it's not going to be so much in the catch play routine as it would be some of the drills, defensive drills that we would do to try to get them moving their feet in a direction and catching the ball on the run. That's certainly, you know, developmentally appropriate as you age through the game. You got to be able to go from catching in a standing position to catching when there's movement, which requires you to control your head and run soft on your feet. Because when your head is bouncing, of course, the ball is going to appear to be bouncing in the sky as it's coming to you, which makes it hard to catch. So, yes, not so much in the throw catch routine. I mean, obviously, throwing long is part of the routine. So, you know, they tend to be a little bit less accurate when they're throwing the ball 300 plus feet. Sometimes I'm talking about high school kids, mm-hmm. and that will require you to have to catch them, you know, move up, move back, move to the side occasionally to make catches. But I hope I answered your question. Yeah, we typically do that stuff intentionally in more of a defensive drill for the movement catches.
Okay. And let's address this question for the young coaches or coaches working with young kids, and then we can go on to the next topic that we want to address. You know, the biggest thing here all the time, kids are afraid of the ball. There's a fear factor. You know, you've had young kids that are afraid of the ball. Maybe explain a little bit, because that's a natural reaction. A ball hurts. It's a hard baseball. Explain what you guys might do to try to build up to where they, you know, they're always going to be afraid a little bit, but to build up their confidence so that way they're less fearful. Well, how do you do that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Very strategically. And there's definitely ways that you can do it. The first thing that I always suggest is you don't want to use a real baseball, you know, when you're first teaching people how to catch. They hurt. And when people get hurt, they get fearful. So use a softer ball or a tennis ball. You know, when you really start talking about the T-ball age groups, we typically, so I'll use my son as an example because I was unbelievably strategic when teaching him how to catch. And what I did was, the first thing I did was I found a baseball glove that was a small adult size glove that was already broken in. So there was some margin for error, Peter. You know, I laugh because I see like these T-ballers and Coach Machine Pitch kids, and they go out and they have these cute little plastic gloves that are about as big as their hand, and the ball can't even barely fit in there, you know. And I'm like, you know, try to be an adult and use a glove that's just as big as your hand. You're not going to have as much success, not to mention somebody who's just learning how to catch. So I really, you know, I got this glove. It was already broken in. It was a small infield glove for an adult. And I made the band that goes across the back of the wrist, that had to be tightened up so it wouldn't fall off his hand. So then if I got the ball in the glove, it would almost close itself. So my whole goal was to create confidence. And confidence comes from success. So I strategically would have him or any other, like I coached his T-ball team. So I would have all the players hold their glove out to their glove side away from their body, because they know if they miss, it's not going to hit them in the face or, you know, the belly or wherever. And so I would teach them how to catch the ball off to their glove side first. And if I had to throw it underhand, I would. It just depended on the skill level of the kid as to what I felt like I could do with him. That's part of coaching. that's part of coaching at every level, is assessing where a person's at and where they need to go. So in general terms, glove side first. Then I would have them step across their body, hold their glove, and I'd put them in the position I wanted them in, and then I would work on them catching that backhand catch. Well, over time, when I felt like, the success rates were up, and of course we're doing some above the belly button and some down knee high where the glove fingers are pointed towards the ground, same thing to the backhand side. And then once they got that, they were more confident, because occasionally you would miss, like with an underhand toss, and get it in towards their body more, and you'd be surprised how they would just catch it, mm-hmm. They'd almost surprise themselves with a catch.
Yeah.
But I'm very accurate, especially, close range with a softer ball. All the factors are there to build the confidence. So you do that over time, next thing you're just amazed. Like you said earlier, we don't give kids near enough credit, to what they can successfully do. Especially if you develop them through a progression and build that confidence. You can't just, you're not going to, the first time you dive off a diving board, you're not going to the 10-foot board. What I mean? You're going to start on the side of the pool, and then you're going to work your way up to the 3-foot one and so forth. So it's the same thing. You just have to progress. And that's what I would do. So, not that my son Tabor is any superstar or anything, but by the time he was 8 years old, I could play full adult catch. Like, people would think I was going to kill him. He had that much confidence in his ability to catch by the time he was 8 years old. I just threw the ball to him like I would throw to anybody who's a good baseball player. And that was a progression from the time he was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So if you do the same thing with your kids in practice, you can truly, you'd be amazed where they'll come. But if you just get out there and see kids, here's the issue with throwing with kids. They don't want to hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to partner kids up when they're young. The better throwers and catchers need to be together if they're going to be throwing to each other. A lot of times with the real, real young ones, I let, if I have me and another coach, or me and another dad, or a couple other dads that I felt comfortable with, we may form, some lines, because you don't want too big of lines, try to get as many kids going at the same time, but where we're controlling the catching, so the guys are, so the young players are throwing to us once they're loose, and they have to feel confident that they can throw and let the ball go, because when they're throwing to each other, they tend to baby the ball, especially if they're fearful of the person, their little teammate, their little buddy can't catch the ball, and he's going to get hurt. So they get in bad habits sometimes, just not actually throwing, just making a full throw, if that makes any sense. So I'm hoping it makes a lot of sense, because it's really a factor. So when my son was throwing to me, I would tell him to not, once he was loose a little bit, I'd tell him to try to knock me over, can you knock me over? And he'd load up and let that thing go. That's part of learning how to use your body efficiently. So those are just some tips that maybe some people can use as they're growing their children or growing their team at the youth level.
Absolutely. And I love the progression. Folks, as I told you, Trent's an educator, a teacher. He understands, the movements of the body. He understands what it takes for, to teach young kids. He's been doing it a long time. So I think that's great stuff. Hey, listen, something I hear a lot of, and you've heard this a ton. Everywhere I go, everybody says have fun, that's great. I mean, you can say have fun all day, and then you go to practice, some kid gets hit in the head with a ball, and that's not fun. Or some kid, or a guy strikes out 3 times in a practice game. Well, that's not fun. Let's talk about really, especially in practice, what is fun? What's fun when it comes to the game? What do you think we need to be teaching in order to make the game fun so kids progress and become better at their skills?
Great question. And you nailed it, because it's not fun when you get, hit in the face with a ball or, what have you. But to me, it revolves around a couple things. One, positive energy. Positive energy of a coach is fun to be around. When somebody's positive and excited, that is contagious. So that brings an element of fun. Another element of fun is, you know, having a planned practice where there's not a lot of standing around. Baseball is a game that if practice is not organized, there's going to be one person participating in a drill and the other 10, 11, 12, 13 players are going to be standing around picking dandelions, you know, and that is not fun. It's not fun. They want to be moving. They want to, you know, they want to participate. They want to do things. So, you know, you have to create, you know, for example, stations in practice. So what I did was I found a couple dads that wanted to help me. And, you know, I have enough experience where I said, look, you know, when we do defense, this is going to be your little drill. Okay, depending on the age group. Now, I'm kind of using little kids as an example, but this really can be scaled up to the highest levels, you know, but you're going to be, you know, dad A, you're going to be responsible for this particular defensive drill every time we do defense. Dad B, dad C, you have your particular drills. I have mine. So now we have four stations, and let's say we have 12 kids. We divide them evenly. Now you got, you know, high participation. They're rotating through the different drills. The dads know exactly what they're doing because they're doing the same thing. And I would show them my YouTube video or give them my book and say, here's the drill. Here's how you teach it. Here's how you do it. You know, and then they would repeat it, you know, every time we had practice. So the next time the kids come to practice, oh, we did this last time. They get better at it and better at it. See, baseball is a game of repetition. Mm-hmm. So you don't always want to be springing new stuff on them. You know, you don't want to get stagnant and do the same thing all the time. But, you know, if you have a variety and they get better at it, they'll enjoy it. So energy and variety and organization, to me, creates fun. You know what I mean? That's going to increase success rates. And I haven't met too many people that are bad at something, no matter what it is, that they really like to do it. You know, we typically like things that we're good at, typically. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to sing, but I surely can't sing. So that's kind of an example of maybe something that I don't sing around other people very often. But I guess that's one thing that we might do that's not fun. But, Peter, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, most people like to do things that they're good at. So when you get a practice and you get kids getting better and now they couldn't catch, but they're catching, and they couldn't throw, but they're throwing, they couldn't hit, but they're hitting, and they're running and they're moving and the energy is up and it's high paced. That's fun. I want to come back for that practice, you know. But if one kid's hitting and the rest are standing out in the field and one, you know, it just that's no fun for anybody. You're probably gonna steer some people away from the game of baseball if that's how you're running a practice.
Yeah, what's interesting too is, you know, I remember being in independent ball, even in high school, college. It really doesn't matter what level, you know. They're all kids and they all want to do something fun and interesting. I had a friend of mine who was who's a hockey coach in the NHL, and he was working with the Blackhawks during the strike. And, you know, he was setting up fun things for them. This is NHL players with future Hall of Famers. And one of the things they said about his practice was, boy, not only was it moving all the time, but we had a blast doing it. You know, so they're just like little kids. Now you got a high school team, you know, and you've been at different levels. And, you know, the thing you hear about as you get older, and even with young kids, but – you know, in Georgia, you guys may have a little bit more practice. I'm here in the Midwest where they don't have as many practices. One of the hardest things to do is to set up practices where things happen that when they get into a game, they can just react. So it's kind of like you're practicing game situations. What advice do you have for coaches when it comes to running a practice and making sure that some of the things you're working on are actually going to happen in a ball game?
Yeah, great point. And I want to back up real quick and just say competition is an element of fun. I mean, baseball is a competitive game, and the older you get, the more winning and losing matters. So you can create drills that are competitive, and that usually creates a lot of fun. It can be competitive individually. You can create little teams within your own team that they compete against, and you know, they'll go crazy over that kind of stuff. So that's another way to create fun. But the point you were just making, you know, game situations. So every level of the game has different things that we have to be able to execute in order to win. You know, at the low levels, you might have to know how to stop a play. Like, how do you make the ball dead where base runners can no longer advance? Mm-hmm. You know, if that's something that's part of your level, then you have to practice that. You know, you have to practice, I call that team defense. Okay, so instead of individual D, you know, we're going to have team defense. So at the high school level, we're going to cover bunt defenses and first and third situations and pickoffs into rundowns and cutoffs and relays and defending squeeze bunts, and, you know, which will be part of our bunt D, obviously. But those are all things, whatever, Peter, whatever I expect my players to be able to do in the game, I am responsible to teach them as their coach. Yeah. I can't wait to the game and when the ball's actually out there and be screaming at them, throw it here, do this, you know, that just doesn't work. It doesn't work. And that's definitely not fun for the players. They, you know, they got their parents yelling at them from the stands, throw it here, throw it here. They got the coaches, you know, maybe all three coaches, if you have some other dads helping you or moms, they're yelling, throw it here. It might not all be to the same place. You know, that's chaos. And the kid is, you know, they're just like standing out there not knowing what to do. So, yes, it all boils down to 100%, you know, preparing them for what they're expected to do in the game. Now, that's you know, for somebody that's not an expert coach, that can seem overwhelmingly daunting of a task. Like, it could scare them from coaching. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, start simple. Like, the things that I try to do with anything baseball related is prioritize when it comes to practice. What are the things that are going to happen the most? Okay. Those are the things that we have to clean up first, you know, because it has the most chance of happening in a game. And then once they get good at that, then we start addressing little finer detail things, you know. And then a lot of coaches move up with their teams as they grow. So the way we created this Winning Baseball, you know, book and DVD series is literally like, you know, T-ball. So when you graduate, when this player graduates T-ball, here are the basic few things that they need from a throw, from a catch, from a hit, and a team defense perspective, even a team offense perspective, running the bases, for instance. So, and then when they go to, you know, coach machine pitch, it gets a little bit more advanced. And we really sat down. I sat down with some big time baseball minds, people, you know, a lot smarter than me. This was years and years ago. And we really tried to formulate, you know, what the kids need to know when they come out of each level. And so if you're a coach coaching a team, you know, you're not going to have to cover at the coach machine pitch level what I'm having to cover at high school, you know. That's not realistic. You don't have the practice time, you know, and things aren't going to happen in the game nearly, you know, as variety, you know, as what could possibly happen in a high school game on a 90-foot field. So 90-foot base paths field. So, yeah, great question. I hope I wasn't too vague because, you know, we only have an hour, so I don't want to like.
I want to do is let's take a situation real quick. Let's just take your high school and say, okay, your guys are struggling at a bunt situation, particularly first and second. You know,
right?
And for some reason, it just doesn't translate into a real live thing. When it gets into the game, they're not getting it. How do you? You can't always make sure 100%, but how do you make sure that you're doing it right in practice so that way when it happens in a ball game, it just becomes an instinct?
Sure. Okay. So first you teach it, right? So the first thing you're going to do is like, I may even take them into a classroom and, you know, we're going to put it up on the board and we're going to draw it out and show them where everybody goes and why they go where they go, right? For that situation that you described. Then we go out onto the field and we practice it, where, you know, it's kind of like a walkthrough for a football play. You know, you're not going game speed yet. You're just making sure everybody's, got, you know, the idea now that you're actually out on the diamond itself. And then, you know, you start moving the ball. You know, as a coach, you're at the plate, you bunt the ball and see if they can execute. Well, if they can do that, then you start to bring in the base runners. So maybe your outfielders are actually going to run the bases for you, you know, put a little pressure on them with bases, with base runners, excuse me. And then, you know, if you don't have base runners, use a stopwatch. So, you know, we gauge everything at the high school level on 4 seconds or less. So, you know, we're going to execute a bunt defense. You know, the ball, from the time it's bunted, the clock starts. From the time the ball gets to its destination, you know, let's say it's first base, you know, you stop the stopwatch. Well, if it's 4.1 or 4.2, 4.3, the guy's safe. And they learn that way to execute game speed. And then we rep it out, Peter. We rep it out. So a couple times a week, we're going to execute team defense scenarios. And if something happens in a game that we don't successfully execute, I make a note of it. And then the next practice, we're going to make sure that we address it so that we can clean that up and have a better chance of succeeding the next time it's put on.
Great stuff. Love it. All right. Let's talk about the word pressure, because, you know, if you don't put the pressure on them, like you said, in practice, sooner or later, it's not going to translate in the game. You know, I think, I'm thinking out loud a little bit. You know, sometimes I don't think we put enough pressure at the younger levels, because we don't want them to fail. So we want to put them in a position to succeed. But they've got to fail at the young levels if they're going to learn anything.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, you know, I think the greatest tool as a coach you can give your players is to tell them that they have the freedom to fail.
Excellent.
Now, when we're talking about failure, we're talking more about from a physical standpoint. You know, the mental failure, like a mental error, shouldn't happen more than once. So you don't have – I'm not giving my players permission to fail mentally over and over again, but I give them permission to fail physically. You know, they're not going to be perfect. The game doesn't allow for you to be perfect. As long as you are competing and you're focused, you know, and you're giving your best effort, you know, that's all I can ask for. That's all you have control over. So the worst thing you can do, and it happened to me personally when I was playing, is to get on your players for making physical errors, because you can't play this game tight. You just can't do it. You have to play relaxed, and the kids are going to feed off of the coach. So if you're tension and anxiety and pressure coach, and you're, you know, you get all hyped up when people make mistakes and you yell at them and, you know, you pull them out of the game when they make a mistake or whatever, they're going to play and they're going to be tight. And they're not going to perform. So, yeah, I even at the high school level, I say that to my guys on a regular basis. You have permission to fail. All I expect is, you know, that you're competing your rear end off and that you prepare, you know, for those moments. And, you know, that's all we can do.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was speaking at a convention one time, and a high school coach came up to me, a pretty good program too. And he said to me, you know, one of the areas that he struggled in, and which I was kind of amazed, but, you know, it happens at all levels, I guess. One of the things he struggled at was getting guys to be ready on every pitch. You can tell them, you can emphasize it. Is there anything you do to train them to do that?
when you figure that one out, bottle it and we'll be millionaires. We'll sell it and be millionaires. But, you know, really, you know, we talk about it, we emphasize it. You know, I try to have little verbal cues in the game, you know, for the guys. But
something in practice you can do?
Absolutely. I mean, when we're taking batting practice, you know, I'm constantly watching my players to see if they're, you know, they're pre-pitch, they're creep, you know, are they reacting to balls? Are they off in space, you know, standing flat-footed, not moving, not reacting, not anticipating? You know, it's one of the toughest skills in the game, because how many, you know, actual attempts does any particular position get in one game? You know, I mean, you literally can play shortstop, which is supposed to get the most action, and you might not even get a ground ball the entire game. You know, you might get six, but you might get none. And you never know when they're going to be. So every pitch, we have to anticipate a missile being hit at us, and we have to anticipate going side to side very hard. You know, that should not catch us off guard. A hard hit ball to our side should not catch us off guard. So I think one of the best analogies I've ever used, I've ever heard, and it's not my own, is the Charlie Brown Lucy football scenario. Like, every single time he went to kick that thing, she pulled that football out, and he would flip and fall on his back. Uh-huh. And he did it over and over and over again every single time. Okay, he was ready to kick that football. You know, call him not very smart or whatever you want, but that's like how we play defense. We like, you expect the ground ball, you don't get it. You know, that's like the football being pulled out from you. You know, you expect the ground ball, you know, you expect action, you don't get it. Might be the 100th pitch and boom, here it comes at you. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I think as you get older, honestly, that's something that separates the men from the boys. When the consistency becomes razor thin, like the difference between one guy and another as you move up, you know, the guys that can keep that focus and don't let their mind wander, I think they're the ones that perform the best on a regular basis. They're more consistent. And I just don't know, other than giving them the knowledge and what they're supposed to do and watching them in practice. I mean, beyond that, it comes down to personal responsibility. If you really care and you want to do well, you're not going to let your mind wander, you know? And if you have any suggestions, you know, above and beyond that, I would love to, you know, to hear it. But, well, I think
figure that one out. We'd be millionaires probably.
Yeah. But, you know, I also think that your pitching has something to do with that too. You know, I mean, if your pitcher has good tempo, he stays up on top of the mound, he makes his pitch, he doesn't walk all the way halfway to the plate, turn around, walk halfway back, you know, and he walks a marathon during the game, and it's just him himself walking to catch the ball back from the catcher. If he makes the pitch, backs up, catches the ball up by the rubber, toes and goes, and he's throwing a lot of strikes, you know, I think that keeps the defense in the game. You know, if it's ball, 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 and it's taking forever in between pitches, I mean, it's hard not to let your mind wander. So I think that the better your team plays and the pace at which your pitchers work and the efficiency at which they work, I think helps keep your defense in the game. So I think that's something that can help. But ultimately, it comes down to individual responsibility and, like, just getting yourself mentally ready. This pitch, here it is. Boom. Nope, it wasn't. All right, it's this pitch. Boom. You know, no, it's not. It's this pitch. Boom. And you just can't wander, because sure enough, I mean, it happens to us as we're all growing up. I remember that feeling of being in a daydream and all of a sudden this white thing's, like, halfway to me, you know. And that's usually when I made a mistake. So,
you know, Trent, that's a great point about the pitcher. And I got to tell you, yeah, I agree with you, because if pitchers would just get the ball and pitch, you know, they probably throw more strikes, because a lot of times, you know, they got so much time to think. They're probably thinking about all kinds of things when they just got the ball and throw it. Not only would it increase the strikes, but like you said, the defense too would be on their toes a lot more. Now, I'd be remiss, because you mentioned at the beginning, you said, you know, fielding is something you work on a lot.
Yes.
So I want to end it with the fielding aspect of it. But I want to start it off with, you know, you've been in the game a long time. So tell me, you know, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, what's the difference? What's the different things that now you're teaching now that you weren't teaching 3 to 5 years ago?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I've seen the game evolve, you know, from as a player. And now, you know, this is my 25th year as a head coach, 27th year overall. At a level that I chose the high school level, by the way. I mean, the reason why I chose the high school level, just for the audience to know, was because I didn't feel like I learned enough as a high school player. And I made a promise to myself when my career came to an end, whenever that was, that I would go back and be a high school baseball coach. So I honored that commitment, and that's why I'm at this level now for 27 years. Wow. But I certainly have seen the game evolve in numerous ways, offensively and defensively. One of the things that, you know, I mean, I'll just give you a for instance, because there's so many, is, you know, it wasn't more than like 8 years ago when we were like being taught, or the general theme was to push through almost every ground ball, you know, like you were going to, you know, cut the distance down with your hands, you know, push through, cut the hop. And of course you were going to try to create momentum. That hasn't changed, that part, you know, momentum and direction really hasn't changed. Just more like how you were receiving the ball, like funneling was kind of fading out, you know. Mm-hmm. And then what I've seen, you know, and I've learned, it's like the long, you know, you go to a phase when you first start coaching, Peter, where you feel like you kind of got it figured out, and you create these little philosophies, and, you know, and then you start going to the ABCA and surrounding yourself with people that are very smart, and you start to realize maybe you don't know as much as you thought you know, and your mind starts growing. And it's like the world of absolutes to me in baseball have kind of faded away. Like there's different ways you field based on the different types of ground balls that you're catching, you know? So, you know, there's certain ground balls that I would funnel. There's certain types of ground balls that I would push through, certain types of ground balls that I would catch with one hand, certain types of ground balls that I catch with two, you know, certain ground balls I want to set my feet more and, you know, be more textbook, and certain ground balls that I'm going to throw on the run. And, you know, so there's like all these different scenarios, which kind of takes us back to that catch play that I was talking about earlier, when you're trying to incorporate athleticism into the routines, you know, with the 180s, reverse 180s, 360s, one-legged throws, you know, all these things, you know, that translate into fielding itself, because part of fielding is throwing. You know, fielding is one half of the equation. You got to throw the ball if it's a ground ball, you know, to a destination. So here the catch play comes in. But yeah, so, you know, just seeing the difference in basically I've seen more of the absolute way of thinking kind of fade by the wayside. And you start to realize that there's more ways to skin a cat, you know, than just one way.
And it sounds like, when they're, you know, even when they're younger, when you're working with young kids, you know, just like you're talking about catch play, you're saying, hey, we got to do some forehand, some backhand, some different plays, because, you know, in the old days we focused a lot just on the ball at me, and we kind of stayed away from the backhand and forehand. And then you see a lot of kids having trouble as they get a little older because they've never practiced it when they were younger.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, you know, what it goes back to what we said earlier, where, you know, if you expect a player to be able to make a play, whether it's a team D or an individual play, you have to prepare them to make that play. Well, the reality is the ball's not going to be hit right at us every time. We're going to have to go glove side up the middle. We're going to have to go backhand. And if we're going to move up in this game and advance, we have to be able to show a certain proficiency in those skills, or somebody's going to take my job and at those positions. So, yeah, you know, your skill, your drills should incorporate all three zones. Is what zone one to me, it's this fancy terminology, is like right at you in between your feet, you know. Zone two is going to be backhand, you know, so outside throwing side foot, and then, you know, you got your glove side, you know, your forehand, which is outside your glove side foot. So you got to practice all three of those. And you know, something that young coaches need to understand is we need to go from, you know, predictable to unpredictable. So, you know, your drills are going to start out very predictable. They're going to know exactly what's happening. And then not only do they go predictable to unpredictable, but they go from simple to complex. So you got both those elements. So at the very beginning levels, everything is going to be predictable and simple. You know, at the highest levels, you're going to advance to, you know, unpredictable, predictable and unpredictable and simple to complex. So, yeah. So it's going to be unpredictable and complex. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. So unpredictable and complex. And that's the most advanced skill set that a player can have. When they can show a high level of proficiency doing that, then that you got yourself a player. So, yes. When I was growing up, this is what they told us, Peter. You know, you got to get in front of everything. Like, you got to get in front of it, you know. And what we found out is that doesn't create the most consistency. Now, you have to be prepared to move laterally and create angles to try to get in front. But, you know, there's going to be times where you're going to be much better served to commit to a backhand, you know, declare a backhand, declare a forehand catch, put yourself in those positions, which often allow you to get in a better position to throw, which is going to allow for the highest level of success. So I hope I'm not being confusing there. Simple to complex, predictable to unpredictable. Those are very, very important. Those combine together as your teaching skill.
Yeah, I really like that because that gives them a progression. A lot of times, like you mentioned in throwing, playing catch, there's times where you got to go one-handed. Explain those situations when fielding.
Yeah, well, like, so anytime you're reaching for the ball outside your shoulders, you know, up above your head or above your shoulders, down to the ground, we work much more athletically when we go singular handed to make a catch. Anytime you try to keep both hands together when you're reaching far distances, trying to be athletic, it doesn't allow the body to move free and comfortably, free and easy. So you're restricting movement a lot of times if you are making difficult plays and you're trying to keep both hands near each other. So, you know, anything inside your shoulders, you know, to me, anything inside your shoulders, you know, head high, down to your belly button, basically that rectangular area, you can work to keep both hands together. You just flex your knees or get a little taller. You know, we can be more efficient that way, more, you know, making transitions, being, you know, deflection, all that stuff. We're just transferring energy of the ball from the glove to the hand. If we're turning a double play, what have you, you know, it allows for that. But when the ball's off to your sides, Peter, you got to make the catch. You're not going to, you know, you got to squeeze the ball and secure it, bring it back to the throwing side shoulder. You know, you take the glove to the hand and get rid of the ball, you know, on your throw. So, you know, be careful, young coaches, of trying to get your young players to use two hands on everything, because you can coach some athleticism out of them, you know, if you're forcing them to always use two hands on every play.
Excellent. That's excellent. Hey, Trent, we got a couple more minutes. I want to address one question, and then what we'll do at the end, because, you know, there's so much you can talk about when it comes to, you know, development of the skills and building confidence and practice organization, all that. What I'll do at the end is kind of open it up. Any advice you just want to give out to our coaches, players, and parents in the U.S. and around the world, that'll be kind of the closer.
Okay.
But before we do that, one more question.
Yes.
In your videos, I saw a couple things. I really like this a lot. You talked about starting with the ball in the glove in some of your drills. Explain what that is and why you do it.
Yeah, that goes into the progression. That's the simple to complex, you know, predictable to unpredictable. So if you're, let's use a double play feed, like a flip feed as our example. You know, when you're trying to teach the mechanics of footwork and body actions, anytime you have a moving ball, okay, the body and the mind, they have a hard time focusing on the actual movement that you're trying to teach. Because what's going to happen when you put a moving ball in there is they're going to do what they've always done. Their normal muscle memory is going to take over because it becomes a reaction. So we're trying to take the reaction out of it, and we're trying to teach a new movement sequence to a young player. So you want to teach them how to do it without a ball or with a ball in the glove, So they don't, you can take away the element of them having to catch the ball, pick the hop, you know, bad hops, all the different things, fear, whatever. That's all eliminated, and now they can focus solely on the execution of the skill itself. So it's just, that's just a part of progression, you know, go from the ball in the glove to a rolled ball, you know, to movement, you know, where you're actually stepping into the field, and then a rolled ball where you're stepping in, and then random. Random is like the last thing. But, you know, yes, you're 100% correct. When you're teaching things, start with the ball in the glove and focus on the footwork and the body actions until they can become efficient at that, and then start implementing in the rolled ball. And you don't want to go straight to a fungo. You know, that's too much. That's going from the side of the pool to a 10-foot diving board. When you go from no ball to a fungo, you know, you got to start with a controlled roll ball. That's predictable. They know exactly where the ball is going to be rolled, how fast it's going to be rolled, how it's going to be rolled, and they can progress with their, you know, transferring that confidence that they showed. They showed they could do it with the ball in the glove. Now let's show that you can do it with a ball that's moving a little bit. And then you just kind of keep building on it until you get the, till you can back up all the way to the plate and hit a fungo, you know, in that same spot you were rolling it. And then hopefully by the time they're in high school, you can hit random fungos and they're going to execute all the different feeds properly based on how and, you know, where the ball is that they're fielding it, how hard it's hit, where it's located, all that stuff. So that's the unpredictable phase and complex right there.
Fantastic. And finally, here's the part where anything you want to mention to our coaches, players, or parents around the world, could be about coaching, could be something we missed, you know, on one of the questions. Anything you just want to mention, then we'll close it off, man.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, encourage parents and coaches to, one, understand the importance of practice. You know, in America in particular, kids are playing more games than ever. But, you know, I argue that, you know, their fundamentals, their game savviness, their understanding of the nuances of the game of baseball are not very good. And where you learn to get better is in practice. You know, I think you demonstrate your skill sets that you've created in practice in the games. But if, you know, but if you're counting on games to improve your skill sets, I think you're going to reduce the speed at which somebody, you know, gets better. You know, they're probably going to get better. You know, in some instances, I see kids get worse. I mean, I've seen high school kids get worse when all they do is play games in the summer and don't practice because they're not getting the reps, you know, to maintain the functionality of their movements. But that's one thing, you know, make sure you're getting in your practice. You should be practicing about twice as much as you're playing, in my opinion, at the youth levels for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, even high school, we, you know, in Georgia, we play 3 games a week minimum, but we're practicing, you know, every other days, and we literally practice some on the days of games. But, you know, the next thing and last thing that I'll leave with the parents and the coaches is be careful of burnout. You know, kids love to play the game of baseball, but encourage them to play other sports. You know, if they have a love for basketball or football or soccer, you know, let them play those other sports, because at the high school level, Peter, I'm experiencing more than ever young players coming up to me now and telling me that, you know what, coach, I've done this my entire life. I've been traveling around playing baseball. I have the nicest uniforms, the nicest bat bags. You know, we're winning rings at weekend tournaments. You know, like they just feel like they've been there and done that, and they're tired of it and they want to go do something else. So make sure you're giving, if your kid is just a baseball only, you got to give them some time away from the game. They need a mental break. They need a physical break and they need to be kids. You know, you just can't go at it 12 months a year and expect them to maintain that fire all the way through. You know, there might be a super, super small percentage of human beings that can go at it like that and actually still love it when they're, you know, by the time they're 17, 18 years old, when it really matters, you know, when you're a varsity player or a collegiate player or, you know, professional player, that's ultimately what you're trying to build towards. So you don't want to burn people out, snuff them out, you know, before they get to that point with overkill, you know. So have some sense about what you're doing, and, you know, you can't browbeat your kids, you know, over this game. You can't, you know, we think it's so easy sometimes when we sit on the side and watch, and it's the most difficult game to play in the world, in my opinion. And, you know, for little young kids and teenagers, it's, you know, it's difficult. And as parents, we want our kids to be successful, and you know, we all do, and we hate to see when they struggle, but the worst thing you can do is browbeat them. And, you know, when you get away from the field, all you do is talk about the game. Go get some ice cream. You know, it's a game. That's what it is. Baseball is a game. So we got to keep that in perspective. But that's pretty much what I wanted to leave, you know, with your audience. And I hope I was able to, you know, provide some insight that maybe can help kids, parents, coaches have a better overall experience by listening to some of the things you and I shared.
Great way to end the show. Let me tell you, you hit a grand slam there when it came to multi-sport athletes, and also when it came to the practice, you know, practicing more than playing, because there's no doubt about it. We're seeing a lot of that in the U.S. So thank you for saying that. That was awesome. Trent, thanks for your time. I know you got early school tomorrow morning. That was Trent Mongero, head baseball coach, and also the owner of Winning Baseball. He's the head baseball coach at Glenn Academy in Gainesville, Georgia. Trent, got to thank you, man. You have a good coaching day tomorrow, because I know you got practice.
We have a game tomorrow, Peter. We have a game.
Oh, that's right. You guys are playing already. See, here we are.
Yeah, we have 13 games already. We're halfway through our season already down here in Georgia.
Boy, you guys are in God's country down there. God bless you.
My pleasure. Take care, okay?
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Trent. All right. That was Trent Mongero. You can check him out on Twitter at Coach Mongero, M-O-N-G-E-R-O, his website, playwinningbaseball.com, and also DirtBros, that's BROS.com. But we're going to have all this for you on the show notes. So I want to thank Trent for being on the show. That was outstanding. Thank our producer with the Lineup Meeting Group. The other side of the window, Brian Kroc. Thanks for the producing of the show. You're outstanding. Got to give you a little high five. I want to thank our audience for listening to us. That was an awesome show. Don't forget, check us out. Join Twitter. Also, you know, take all the social media that we have on Twitter and Facebook. You got it all on the website. Do us a favor. Forward it to everybody you know in the game. Again, it just spreads the word out. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You've listened to Baseball Outside the Box. I'm Pete Caliendo, your host. I want to wish you a great coaching day, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.